on 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on, weeknights from 6.
On 2FM.
Yes, a big thank you to both Emma and Roz for driving us through this afternoon. They'll be back at the same time tomorrow. But for now, it is Wednesday, June 29th. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, Ireland mauled by the Maoris. Shane Byrne will be joining me to review Ireland's early morning defeat in New Zealand. Greg Allen will be previewing the Irish Open live from Kilkenny. And we will hear a world-exclusive interview Greg got with DP World Tour CEO Keith Pelly. Nadine Doherty and Aoife Murray will be bringing us up to date on everything from the world of the LGFA and Camogie. And if that wasn't enough, Stephen Higgins from Cross Court View will have the latest from Wimbledon and indeed the future of the legend that is Serena Williams. All of that and the latest sports news over the course of the next hour. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Yes, hello there. It is great to have your company in this Wednesday evening, wherever you are tuning in from. And we are going to begin tonight's show with rugby. And as Neil Tracy wrote on the RTÉ website this morning, be careful what you wish for. Andy Farrell said he wanted this tour to be tough based on this morning's 32-17 defeat to the Maori All Blacks. He's got that and more. Former Ireland international Shane Byrne joins me now. Shane, this seems like a very damaging defeat from a lot of angles. Ireland ripped apart tactically, a host of injuries and indeed a morale-denting defeat to begin a tour of New Zealand. How costly will this result be going forward?
Well, I suppose you've got to look at it that, you know, a lot of guys got experiences that they're not going to forget. That was the advantage when everyone saw that it was a five-game tour rather than just a test. You get the chances to bring an extended squad out and you get a chance to blood guys who wouldn't otherwise get a chance to get on a full international tour. That's what these games were meant to be about. But unfortunately, the manner of the defeat this morning, just there was a lot of aimless kicking, a lot of bad decision making. The defence, although there was a lot of passion and pride shown in several different cases, there were wide holes that the Maori All Blacks just completely exploited. And it really does throw a few question marks at the... I know it's going to be a completely different team at the weekend, but there's no doubt that the ripple effect from this will be within the camp, that, you know, it was a damaging defeat.
Certainly damaging. However, five uncapped players, combined 25 caps across 12 of the starting team. Is that reason enough to not be overly critical?
You could see what the team was trying to do. You could see that they were trying to go hard up in defence. But the problem with doing that is that you left gaps out wide. And a team needs to be able to adjust on the park. And that just seemed to be sorely lacking. It was just something that was missing on the pitch, maybe the bit of leadership. So therefore, you had all these young guys on. You were great getting five guys who were uncapped out onto the pitch. But it just seemed a bit rudderless. And you would hope that it's not going to be damaging to the players themselves, that they're able to get through it. It's the first game on a five-game tour. There's plenty of rugby still to come, but it has to improve. The manner in which some of the guys played, you know, the distribution, the simple mistakes, the discipline, which was an absolutely huge issue throughout the game, was something that just never seemed to be addressed in the park. So it was just a bit aimless. And maybe, you know, a few more experienced players on that team would have made a huge, huge difference to the guys who obviously have never been tested at that level before.
Yeah, and I know you mentioned, Shane, that it will be a vastly different team come this Saturday for the test of New Zealand, which you can hear live commentary of here on 2FM. But players that may be missing injury-wise, Jeremy Lachman had a HIA in the opening minutes before permanently leaving at half-time, while James Hume, Jimmy O'Brien and Keane Healy all hobbled off in the second half. Healy needed to be carted off with an ankle injury, and Andy Farrell in his post-match interviews has referenced that Healy seems to be the biggest doubt. I suppose I want to talk about loose head options then, because it looks like Healy is the main concern for Saturday. So Andrew Porter has been the preferred starting loose head for Andy Farrell, with Healy the backup. Finlay Beelam could also provide cover on that side, but they expect that now we may see additional call-ups. We've seen Niall Scannell. I mean, he's only off a flight yesterday, a long-haul flight, and he was one of, I suppose, the better performance, best of a bad bunch, I suppose. But who might come into the fold now, and how big of a concern is it for yourself in terms of front row cover?
Yeah, well, I tell you, the first thing he's going to do is look within the squad. You know, we've got to get the update on Lachman. Was he taken off for HIA? Was that the main problem? Hopefully it isn't something like that, that he it is something that he's available right from the off. But the versatility of Porter, obviously, is a huge help there. There's no doubt about that. But I wouldn't write off who they would call out. You know, it's something that it's very, very hard thing to do. Herring, as you saw, did settle on the ground. But I think the first protocol is definitely going to be Lachman. I wouldn't look away from him just yet, but he is going to have to step up. The scrum was a major, major problem at the weekend. Any time that the ball was held within the scrum went back, but the setup was really bad. Second row was very high. Back row were slipping off the front row. There's a lot to work on there. And obviously the experience of Keane Healy stepping out of the tour, which it does look like likely now, is going to be damaging.
Well, speaking of Jeremy Lachman, a player welfare lobby group, Progressive Rugby, said it's deeply alarming that Jeremy Lachman was allowed return to the field of play after his head injury in the first minute. The Munster prop could be seen stumbling for those who missed the match as he tried to get back to his feet. World Rugby's guidelines would suggest that Lachman should not have been allowed return to the pitch, having displayed obvious signs of concussion, which would make a HIA redundant. 8 days ago, the game's governing body announced increased measures to deal with concussion, and then we see an incident like this. How concerning was it for yourself, Shane, seeing those pictures?
Yeah, it is something that is the weakness in the way it is at the moment, is that the HIA test, where it covers a huge amount of stuff. It covers you know, the ability of a guy cognitively to be able to follow procedure and make sure that everything is still working. So therefore, if a guy takes a knock, and he does, as we all saw, he took a wobble when he was trying to stand up. But if he does manage to get into the change room, settle down, and he does pass the HIA, well then, by the way the rules are set out now, he is allowed back on the park. Now, whether that's right, that's a different question completely. You know, a guy who visibly shows that he's a bit shook, should that just be a case of that, look, you're not coming back on the pitch? There's just no way. So, yeah, this is something that's constantly changing, as we said, that only very, very recently new rules on hardening up the setup that is revolving around concussion and anything like that on the pitch. It's constantly evolving and we still have to get it right. But yeah, I was surprised to see him come back on, having passed the HIA.
Yeah, for sure. Listen, Shane, I want to end our conversation on a positive note. I suppose Gavin Coombs' try and his performance seems to be one of the stands out. What other positives do you feel we can take now ahead of Saturday?
Yeah, Jordan Armour, I thought, was good as well. Combs, I thought, was excellent. Pendergrass got involved as well. So many guys will have wanted to step up. The Kieran Frawley, it didn't quite work out for him at out half. But you'd love to see a guy like that getting a go again. But you could see Ireland had so little ball. You know, the first quarter, you could see the intention was there. The inventiveness was there. When we had ball, we were able to make a lot of ground. It's just that we were absolutely starved at the ball from down. The second half the second quarter of the game literally just killed off it as a contest. So we've just got to step up from this. As you said at the very, very start, a lot of guys got a huge experience. I bet not the result that they wanted, but we've got more guys into that international frame, and that can only be a good thing experience-wise.
Absolutely. Well, Shane Byrne, I'm sure we'll be chatting plenty across this tour of New Zealand. We will have to dust ourselves off as the first test against New Zealand comes on Saturday. So plenty of learnings, as they say in rugby parlance. So from rugby to golf, we'll be chatting to Greg Allen in a few moments. So do stay with us.
RTE
2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on.
Golf.
So before we chat to Greg Allen I can tee up an exclusive interview courtesy of Greg himself. So after a historic announcement yesterday, which has significantly tightened the strategic alliance between the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour, the chief executive of the DP World Tour has been speaking today to RTE Sport. As part of the new alliance, 10 players from the DP World Tour will gain full PGA Tour cards for next season, but there is much, much more to this. It is a proper formal alignment of what were once rival tours. So the levels of the agreement are in response to the emerging LIV Tour, which of course is Saudi backed, which stages its second event in Oregon this week. So DP World Tour Chief Executive Keith Pelly sounded quite a relieved man when he spoke to Greg Allen a little bit earlier on today.
Yes, I was relieved. It's been frustrating not to be able to speak, but I couldn't until we could speak freely and have clarity on where we were going and what our future was. And that future now is to change our strategic alliance to a joint operational partnership with the PGA Tour. It's been a very interesting and challenging time, as you know, and there's no question this has been accelerated by what has transpired over the last couple of months with LIV Investments. But for our members, it gives them security, guaranteed prize funds for the next 5 years to grow. It gives us a chance to transform our tour. And the additional investment will allow us to do so much that will allow us to grow our national opens, which is something that is critical for us. Just like here at the Horizon Irish Open, we can make it even bigger and we can make it even better and we can make it even stronger. So I can't tell you how optimistic I am about the new partnership.
The feeling that almost a world tour is being created in parallel to what will be a tour, it won't go away, LIV will not go away by the looks of things. Or how do you answer the questions that the DP World Tour might lose its identity with the bigger brother, much bigger brother PGA Tour and forming this strategic alliance?
Well, I would answer that there is no chance that will happen. The PGA Tour see the unbelievable value that the DP World Tour brings. Our knowledge of the international markets, our relationships, our national opens. This is a full integration without consolidation, without a merger, and at the same time, keeping our complete identity and our independence. What I will address, and I'll address it head on, because there is 10 spots, 10 players not already exempt in next year's ranking, get a PGA Tour card, and a very good card at that, a card that will see them play for between 27 and 29 times and potentially for $450 million, which is significant. However, we are the furthest thing from a feeder tour. A feeder tour is when you only want to be elevated to the next level. When you look that you're going to have 80,000 people here at the Horizon Irish Open, is that a feeder tour? When you have 120,000 at the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth, when you have events like Abu Dhabi, events like Dubai, we have a strong, vibrant, independent tour that now does have a pathway to the PGA Tour, but so many iconic events that now with this additional investment we'll be able to build upon.
How threatened was the DP World Tour in an existential sense by LIV if this alliance with the PGA Tour could not have been agreed to the terms which you needed to be agreed to retain your identity?
Well, I think that's an excellent question, Greg, and I would say that LIV Investments are spending a tremendous amount of enormous sums on players, and players, just a few players, but 8 events at $25 million, and next year the PGA Tour will have 11 events with an average of $20 million. Those type of prize funds aren't sustainable unless you're actually playing in America, where the commerciality and the size of the market is much different. So we believe that we did have to make a decision, and we had already made our decision in November of 2020 to have a strategic alliance with the PGA Tour. Now we said, and by the way, Jay and I have been talking about this for 5 years. This had just been accelerated by LIV Investments. And I don't think we were ever threatened in terms of our our existence. We will always be here. But in order for us to grow, in order for us to build and secure our tour long term, we have to do something significant. And this is something significant. Now you have guaranteed prize funds for our players. You've got a pathway. You've got a new global series we're going to create. You know, you even look at Horizon here. The PGA Tour assisted in bringing Horizon as a partner to the Horizon Irish Open. And next week at Genesis, it will be the biggest event in terms of strength of field that we have ever had on the European Tour. So, yeah, there's a lot of good things happening, but I'm relieved that we can now talk about it because it's taken some time. And as you can imagine, the last couple of months have been very stressful.
Did Liv approach the DP World Tour to buy you, as the rumours went? And was it a case of you measuring one offer against another offer?
No. And there's been a lot of rumours. You know, there was a rumour that I was in the Centurion Club when I was actually in Sweden at the time. There's been a lot of rumours. And I've tried to tell our staff over and over again, let's remember what is fact and let's remember what is fiction. In terms of the rumoured offer, what happened in 2021 in Malta, we viewed an unsolicited presentation from P54, which is the marketing agent of Golf Saudi. In September, I took that presentation out of courtesy to the board, and it was never an official written offer. I took that presentation to the board. It was a presentation where the financials were less compelling than that we had been offered by Rain Capital and the PGL some 9 months ago. That's back in September 2021. From then on, we focused on our partners at the PGA Tour. I haven't had any dialogue with Liv since the summer of 2021.
What is it going to look like going forward, the international schedule of the DP World Tour, with this alliance, with this very strong carrot for players to leave the DP World Tour and take one of those 10 non-exempt, already exempt cards?
Yes, but you look at it and you know, the Europeans that have lost their card, if we study it in previous years, stay and go to the Corn Ferry. They'll now come back to Europe. Well, at the same time, you know, with us being the number one pathway, you know, the players from South Africa, the players from Australia will come and play here because it is the best pathway. So I'm really not fussed by that in any such way. I think what you're going to find, Greg, to be totally honest with you, is I think your fields will be stronger going forward. I do believe that. I think there'll be more drama, more excitement, and with the additional investment, that gives us an opportunity to not only play for more prize funds, but put more into other aspects of our business, which I think can drive more consumer awareness of our tour and during the events. I haven't talked about it. We're going to invest every single tournament's going to have a signature hole. We're going to do something around the first tee. Like, you know, not perhaps as big as Ryder Cup, but that's going to be something we're going to do. We've got a couple of creative tournaments that we're going to put on the schedule that only we can do. Only we can do. And you can figure out what those are.
Oh, a little more detail. Come on, well, that's a teaser.
You can kind of figure that out. You can kind of figure out with all the nationalities that we have. We are an international tour. We are the global tour of the world. So we're going to use that those nationalities to do something creative. And that might even be as early as 2023. Most likely will be. But 2024 is where the real opportunity and the real changes you'll see. All this is exciting, but it's now moving forward.
In all coalitions, alliances, there is a larger partner and a smaller partner in politics, and almost always the larger partner, over a period of time, exerts a certain amount of authority or pressure, whatever it is, so that alliances can not fall apart, but diminish in terms of their alliance. Yeah. How do you protect against that happening over a period of time, over a 13-year agreement?
So it starts with, and Jay and I had this conversation over and over again, and it starts with the two of us setting the stage for the culture, setting the stage for how we're going to behave as organizations. It starts with a culture at the top with Jay and I, and filters all the way down. And if you build that right at the beginning, you know, that's the culture you have.
And just finally, to the selfish question, the Irish Open obviously has benefited already from the strategic alliance. You've mentioned the fact that Horizon are an Irish-American company, which are based in Dublin, and which are obviously sponsoring to the tune of €5.7 million. The Irish Open is one of those jewels that you have, which gives the DP World Tour strong identity as distinct from what they have on the PGA Tour. The Irish Open becoming a PGA Tour event has been spoken about, but surely it's something that you need to absolutely protect as one of the jewels, as well as the French Open, the Italian Open, the Scottish Open, the National Opens, those ones which have such strong identity, which give you your place in the world of golf.
Which, once again, would come back to supporting my argument that we're not a feeder tour to the PGA Tour, correct? Mm. You would agree with that?
Oh, but that's exactly what I'm saying, and I'm specifically asking, really, I suppose, about the Irish Open and its future.
Well, first of all, you said a PGA Tour event.
Co-sanctioned PGA Tour event.
Yeah, but first, it would never, I just want to confirm that it would never be unilaterally a PGA Tour event. It would have to be a co-sanctioned event if it was. Those are not the discussions that we're having right now, to be candid. We're talking about a new global series, which will have an event in Europe. The Horizon Irish Open is one of the national opens. It is something that we will continue to build. We thank Horizon and the way that the PGA Tour assist us in bringing Horizon to the table. Could that happen down the road? Again, it's not in our plans to co-sanction a number of events, to be totally candid. Scotland is unique. It has 14 of the top 15 players in the world with a strength of field of 670 with the first player. And it will be the strongest field in the history of the European Tour, now DP World Tour. That's something that's good for European golf. So I think anything's possible, but it's not in the plan right now.
So some very honest views from Keith Pelly there, chatting to Greg Allen a little bit earlier on. Certainly is a focus of Stronger Together. Greg Allen, if I welcome yourself into the conversation now, I suppose, what was your reaction to the honesty given in that interview to yourself a little bit earlier on?
Well, I think the DP World Tour have been, and Keith Pelly in particular, being the chief executive, have been sitting on their hands and not really being able to say what they want to say regarding the Live Tour and the projected response, because there have been lots of rumours. I've heard rumours that they were in, this is over at the US Open, that the European Tour were about to sign with the Live Tour. I mean, that was a strongly worded rumour given to me by someone who I really trusted. And he didn't say it was nailed on, but he said he felt it was more likely to happen than a PGA Tour, DP World Tour alliance. So, I mean, that could have been totally bogus in terms of the source of where that rumour emanated from. And this is possibly, you know, what's happening in this very turbulent period of golf. What do you believe until something is actually announced in hard, fast print, and also by the two heads of the tours that spoke yesterday, Jay Monahan and Keith Pelly, and Keith Pelly today being able to express himself? That's the reason for the honesty, is they wanted to quell, certainly Keith Pelly wants to quell all the bogus rumours that have been going around. And that clearly was a bogus rumour, judging by what he said there, because he said that they have not had any contact with the Live Tour since there was an approach by the marketing arm of Saudi Golf, Golf Saudi, in Malta, which is a type of neutral territory, and that was back in September of 2021. So we're trusting everything that he says, because clearly there's very strong capital to the, you know, in other words, there's a lot of bullet points there. This idea that there was an approach by the Live Tour, it's not totally new. It was also a rumour, but that's now being confirmed. The idea that the PGA Tour and the European Tour, as I keep calling them, because it's very hard not to keep calling them that, but the DP World Tour are now strongly in alliance. This strategic alliance wasn't wishy-washy when it was announced at the beginning, but it wasn't, you know, it was a toe in the water by comparison. And to illustrate that, part of this strategic alliance is the PGA Tour buying into the European Tour Productions, which is the big TV operation that goes around showing the European Tour around the world. That was 15% when the strategic alliance was announced over a year ago. Now it's 40%, almost half. These are very, very strong alignments. And so the danger of the European Tour, DP World Tour, being overtaken by the PGA Tour. And that's why I asked the question about, you know, the way coalitions happened in governments and in politics, when a larger party takes a smaller party on board, and the smaller party can sometimes suffer the next election because they've been totally overshadowed by the larger party. And that is a real danger in any of these type of alliances. But this is a 13-year agreement, so it's not a four-year government term. It seems as though the reason, the honesty of all of that, is that he's been really looking to be able to be free to speak about what is happening in golf right now, because there has been so much rumour and conjecture up to now.
Absolutely. Well, it was a fascinating interview and a really, really interesting listen, Greg. I do want to chat about the Irish Open before time gets away from us. So you're down in Kilkenny at Mount Juliet, and it certainly reads like a who's who of European golf. So many big names. Of course, no Rory McIlroy. He's playing the JP McManus Pro-Am. But defending champion Lucas Herbert is there. Seamus Power, Robert McIntyre, Shane Lowry, Aaron Ray. I can go on. I won't. I will let you do the talking. So much to look forward to, and it all tees off tomorrow.
Yeah, Shane, the first thing I'm going to say is that there are a lot of players missing here, as well as there being a lot of very good big names. And we're very, very gifted in Ireland right now to have three of the world's top 40 players, exactly top 36 players, which is an extraordinary thing for the island of Ireland. You have Patrick Harrington, Shane Lowry, and Seamus Power. It's not Patrick Harrington, sorry, Rory McIlroy, Seamus Power, and Shane Lowry. I'm getting... poor Padraig, putting Padraig
after his big win at the weekend. It's fresh in the mind, Greg.
And also because he's here today, he's a bit tired, obviously, and he's actually, you know, become a star again as a result of the weekend in terms of this level of golf, not just seniors golf, because Padraig has such a presence. Because of what he carries with his three major championship victories, his Ryder Cup captaincy didn't go as well, perhaps, as he would like. But here he has bounced back with a US Seniors Open, and he's become one of the luminous figures of golf again, close to his 51st birthday in the Irish Open context. And Padraig was the first person who ever said to me, and other players have borrowed this since, that this is the fifth major for the Irish players. It carries such an amount of atmosphere. When you step on the fairway for the first tee shot or tee box or the fairway, when you walk down at 8 o'clock, as Shane will do tomorrow and Seamus Power will do tomorrow, it's the Irish Open. There'll be a big gallery here for them at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. It's not like other DP World European Tour events. It carries real sizable atmosphere, bigger than most PGA Tour events. And I can tell you, I've been to them and I've been to the Irish Open, and it never ceases to amaze me how big an event the Irish Open is in terms of how it feels. And to be honest, I wish it had a better field. There are five of the world's top 50, 11 of the world's top 10, our top 100. And, you know, I think it should be better than that. I'd like to see 10 of the world's top 50 and maybe 20 of the world's top 100. And that would be my baseline in terms of, I've been coming to Irish Open since 1985. That's a lot of Irish Opens. And I've seen them at their absolute crescendo, the era of Ballesteros, Langer, Faldo, Montgomery. They were incredible events to be at, because they were... it was arguably the biggest event, international sports event, in Ireland for all those years. And it still is to some degree, but we're much more gifted with having lots of international sporting events in Ireland now. So the Irish Open isn't perhaps what it was back in those days, and I think it should be, because it's got €5.7 million. And while this is a very good field, and, you know, there are other players in the field like Tyrrell Hatton, who's the world number 27, Thomas Peters, who's really rocking back to form, the Ryder Cup player from the 2016, who had a brilliant Ryder Cup partnership with Rory McIlroy, winning three times with Rory, 34 in the world he is. So there are really good players here. But, you know, I'd like to see some of the world's top 10 to some of the world's top 20 even, and there aren't any. But we have Shane, we have Seamus, we have Padraig. We have three great, you know, hands in the contest in terms of bringing the first Irish Open back to an Irish winner since 2016.
Well, hopefully, Greg, hopefully. Shane Lowry, Seamus Power are both very short odds. And you mentioned hopefully we get bigger names over the course of years, given its proximity to the Open Championship as well, which is only a couple of weeks away. Greg, unfortunately, we have to leave our chat there for today, but I'll be checking in with you tomorrow evening when the Open, or the Irish Open, I should say, tees off tomorrow. So, Greg Allen, for now, thank you very much. Still lots to come. We will be checking in with Stephen Higgins on the latest from Wimbledon. But up after the break, I'll be chatting to Aoife Murray and the Dean Doherty on ladies Gaelic football and camogie. RTE 2FM. Game on.
on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on 2FM.
Hey, very welcome back to Game On this Wednesday evening. Before we chat camogie, we are going to start with football because the makeup of the Ladies Football Championship quarterfinals were decided at the weekend. It will be Dublin, Donegal, Cork, Mayo, Armagh, Kerry and Meath, Galway. They are in 2 weeks' time. And a little bit earlier on, I had a wee chat with Nadine Doherty to reflect on the weekend's action. But I began the conversation by asking her how competitive she felt the championship so far, or perhaps how uncompetitive the championship has been so far.
Very predictable championship to date. And I suppose we looked at that at the very start of the championship draw, and we looked at Group D really was the only one that possibly could have thrown up a surprise or two. And that was the group with Donegal, Cork and Waterford. Donegal narrowly beaten Waterford. And then Cork the other day, they beat them in the end up by double scores. But it was a game that Waterford really, really pushed. They pushed hard for the first half. And there were a lot of people in Donegal sweating big time because had Waterford beaten Cork, Donegal were out of the championship. But yeah, as you said, aside from that, it's been really, really predictable. And I suppose it kind of brings into question the competitiveness of a championship of 13 teams. And for me, three groups of three, it's just not working at the minute. There's three groups of three. There's one group of four. The seeding, again, makes it even less competitive. And, you know, as we said, when the groups were drawn, you could predict every single result. And I'd love to see maybe next year, why not try two bigger groups? You know, it might make things a little bit more interesting because, you know, the more games that teams have, the more they build form and so on. So, you know, you would have had Meath there who drew a game and they kind of knew they were through to a quarterfinal. You know, it's not really right for a senior championship. So maybe it's something that the LGFA might look at going forward. But yeah, a few big games over the weekend, I suppose, on paper. The most interesting one for all the wrong reasons, I felt, was the Armagh-Monaghan game. So a few of us had spoken about it before in the preview, and I was asked by somebody, do you think Armagh will go for it? Because by topping that group, you're going to meet Dublin in a quarterfinal. So my answer was, well, we'll see what Armagh do at halftime. And what they did at halftime was they moved players around, they made a load of subs, and they kept the ball for the second half. So, like, you know, should that be the case after two games in a senior championship? I don't think so, you know.
Think that it's a realistic possibility that there might be a change in format. Like, I know we've had some good games, but even the disconnect between the provincial system and then the All-Ireland series, and then you look at these groups as well, and you look at the teams I mentioned at the start, the teams who are going to be looking to keep their senior status and not drop down into intermediate football. I mean, no points for Cavan, Monaghan, Westmeath and Waterford, albeit Waterford did push Cork a bit close, and I know there were permutations in the last match in terms of Donegal and Waterford progressing, but it's all well and good kind of saying it. Do you think, though, there is an appetite at board level and for the decision makers to actually push through a bit of a change in format?
There's definitely an appetite for change with the players. There's an appetite for change with management, possibly with a few county boards. And we've spoken in the past about the LGFA, how progressive they've been. They've been really progressive in the past in terms of change. You'd hope that perhaps they look at it this year in Central Council, and, you know, you'd hope that perhaps some counties might lobby them to do so. I just think at the minute it's doing nothing to progress the game. And another problem I think they have that's I suppose weakening the competitiveness of the championship is relegation. You know, it's a huge flaw. At the minute we have two senior teams going down and one intermediate team coming up. And I feel if you're trying to build your senior championship, your flagship competition, not taking teams out of it. You know, you look at Westmeath, they won the intermediate last year. They're probably going to go straight back down this year. And you have teams who don't want to be relegated at all. I mean, Tip, for example, look at them. Emma Morrissey's penalty in the last minute. You could see what it meant to them after to stay up. So, you know, there is an argument at times for a team being relegated. You know, Meath is an example on a rare occasion. There's merit there. They requested the regrade. It was what was needed for them at the time. It did amazing things for their rebuild. But forcing teams to be relegated to intermediate, I just really don't think it works. And I think those middle teams, what it does is it you know, confidence goes, players leave, and you just find that you have these teams who yo-yo up and down. So look, there's two things that the LGFA may look at, and your fingers crossed that they do.
Yeah, absolutely. It will be interesting to see how that one pans out going forward. But in terms of what impressed you, I know we touched on kind of the, some negative aspects of it and the group standings as well. But like for the likes of Dublin Mayo, there were two teams that knew they were true. But there was a case of top place in the division was at stake and Dublin came true. How impressed were you with Dublin? Kerry had a big win over Westmeath. But again, they'll come out of the group unbeaten. In terms of teams that have impressed you and that have stood out in the group standings, going forward now into knockout football?
Yeah, I mean, you know, all that said, with the lack of competitiveness, there's been absolutely brilliant football played. You know, I thought Dublin, every group game, they're looking stronger and stronger. It was quite routine for them against Mayo. I'd say McBowen probably played one of the strongest teams that he's played so far in the groups to date. But I mean, in saying that, Lindsay Davey came off the bench and Sinead Goldrick wasn't there. So that just shows how much strength they have. But they're getting a lot of game time in, and Dublin are really peaking at the right time. And some of the play was really, really impressive. Kerry, I love watching Kerry this year. They're just playing absolute football. They're really strong around the middle. They have some fantastic players. I've spoken about it before. They have an all-female team of selectors, some of whom are past players, and their influence is really obvious on the pitch. And, you know, Kerry, they're lovely to watch. Their quarterfinal against Armagh is going to be intriguing because Armagh and another team who are playing very well at the minute. And Cork, listen, Cork, like Dublin, seem to be coming good at the right time. While they were made to work quite hard against Waterford, you know, it's no surprise because they're two teams who are quite familiar with each other. But it's the familiar names we know, the O'Sullivans. Durin hit 1-7. Ciara, look, she's instrumental in everything good that Cork do. And interestingly, their sister has replaced Martine O'Brien in goals. So I suppose the manager, Shane Renan, he would know her from Mourne Abbey. And we've spoken last year and the year before, really, you know, Cork's Achilles heel over the last number of years has been their kickouts. So it'll be interesting to see if that move really, really makes a difference when the pressure's on in the knockout stages. So look, a lot of teams playing brilliant football. There has been a huge amount of entertainment. And now at the quarterfinal stage, you know, when we'll talk about it in the next few weeks, that's when things will get really interesting and really competitive.
So to wrap up our conversation, Nadine, Journalism 101, things not to do, but a nice broad, very vague question. We're going to have a lot of exciting football in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, oh, listen, we really are. I think one to pick out is our man, Kerry. They played each other in the Division 2 final a couple of months ago. And surprisingly, Kerry won that day and Armagh would have felt they didn't perform. They're two teams who are quite familiar with each other because they've both been in Division 2 for a number of years. So I think that is definitely one to highlight. The rest are all fairly predictable, I feel. But look, there's going to be a huge amount of brilliant football played and we're looking forward to it in 2 weeks.
So great insight there from Nadine Doherty, as always. I did mention this to Nadine, but if anyone's looking for a feel-good video on Twitter, because I know Twitter is full of negativity, Aisling McCarthy, Tipperary ladies footballer and West Coast Eagles AFLW footballer, posted a video a little bit earlier on of Armagh footballer Amy Mulholland, who found out from the comfort of her couch that she had been selected by the Fremantle Dockers AFLW team in the draft. I know there's a lot of debate whether we want to be seeing our footballers depart to Australia, but it's a really nice video that Aisling posted a little bit earlier on. But we are going to chat Camogie in the company of Aoife Murray. And Aoife Murray, we are approaching the final round of the group stage of the Camogie Championship, and there is so much on the line. So starting with Group 1, so the fixtures for this weekend see Cork host Tipperary, it is Clare versus Waterford, and Dublin travel down to Wexford in the final round. So in terms of standings, Cork are guaranteed a semi-final spot already, but there's so much on the line between Waterford, Dublin and Tip to get through to the knockout stages and into a quarter-final. Starting with Group 1, Aoife, I suppose, how do you see this one going? So much on the line.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I have my calculator out there for the last half an hour. I'm still trying to figure out the permutations for the weekend. But look, I firstly have to say, isn't it brilliant that we're in this position that we actually have so much on the line for the last round of the championship, and for all places to be, whether it's relegation, playoff, holding that top tier status, or actually vying for a quarter final and keeping your championship alive, and really taking Cork out of the equation, you're literally from second place down to sixth place. Every single person, every single team has something to fight for. So it's a real difficult one to call. Like even Cork and Tip, if Tip lose and say for example Clare win, then they're both in the same points. It'll come down to scoring difference. So like not someone jumping from fourth down to sixth. So it's all to play for, and it's going to be really exciting.
Are you surprised with the makeup? Listen, Cork 4-4, I suppose many people would have backed that, but in terms of having seeing Waterford and Dublin and Tipperary battling it out for second spot really, and then Wexford and Clare a bit lower down, in terms of would you be expected at the start of this campaign, or what's shocked you most?
I suppose being honest, you would have expected, I suppose, Tipperary to be in that second place, and that's no disrespect to Waterford, but just how they went, I suppose, last year and being so close to that semi-final spot, you would have thought that momentum would have carried them forward and they would have had quite a positive year and had quite a good league as well. So it is surprising to see them down fourth place, and I think, look, they have suffered through the championship, you know, have yet to score a goal actually from all of their games, quite low scoring games. So that's probably the biggest surprise. You know, Waterford, in fairness, have gone about their business nice and quietly through the league, and I think they've really settled in with the management team. I suppose the biggest concern I'd have for Waterford is Lorraine Bray, and if she's back for the weekend or out for the season. So look, I suppose that's my biggest concern for them. But I've liked how they've gone about their business. Dublin third. I probably would have had them third or fourth maybe in the table, taking their form from last year. But again, a bit like Waterford, I think they've really settled in with their management team. And I think that's really showing. They've shown a very workmanlike quality, pretty strong and physical. So that's probably the biggest surprise really from the table.
So Waterford are on 6 points, Dublin on 5 points, as are Tipperary as well. And their scoring difference for Dublin and Tip is both -5. So it's fairly, it's as tight as it could be. I'm sure Waterford fans and Dublin fans will be hoping that complacency might slip into Cork, or they might take the foot off the gas now that they're home and hose and they're unbeaten. But do you feel Cork will press on and they'll be as rootless as ever? Or do you feel that they might just have the eye on just resting a few players and changing a few names with the looking forward into the knockout stages?
I'm sure if you were the management team, yeah, you'd want to get some game time into some of the fringe players or the players that probably will win the game at the end of a game when you bring them on. However, Shane, look, it's Cork and Tip. I know that when we used to play.
No love lost there.
You know, and especially down in Cork, look, at the end of the day, I think the Cork players, they won't care about where they're at in the table, where Tipperary are at in the table. They'll just want to go out and beat Tipperary. It could be a game of chess, and Cork would still want to beat Tipperary and vice versa. So I don't see there being any complacency with Cork. I'd be very disappointed if there was. Look, it's all about getting that form, because obviously they have a little bit of a gap between the semi-final. So you want to finish this round really, really strong. So I'd be very disappointed if there was any complacency there.
Well, it will be interesting to see how Group 1 pans out. As I mentioned, it's Cork, Tip, Clare, Waterford and Wexford versus Dublin, with so much on the line. Those matches are on Saturday. Looking at Group 2, it's still very competitive in terms of Galway and Kilkenny, so we know who's going through as such. So there were a full round of fixtures last weekend in Group 2. Galway had a big win over Antrim, Limerick defeated Down, and Kilkenny were victorious over Offaly. So that means that Galway are first on 12 points, but have a superior scoring difference over Kilkenny, a superior difference of 14 points. Kilkenny also won 12 points, so the two teams both played for, and they've won for. Limerick, Antrim, Down, Offaly then make up the rest of the group, and it tees up perfectly because it is Galway versus Kilkenny now this coming weekend to see who will get straight through to the semi-final or who will be playing in the quarter-final. How do you see, firstly, Galway-Kilkenny going before we talk about the other fixtures, Aoife?
Yeah, look, it's listen, it's great that it's coming down to this last game and you've got Galway and Kilkenny. I think the hardest thing to hear is to pick a winner, but actually when you look at how Galway have gone about their business, like, they've put up 11.62, massive score, particularly the 11 goals. They've just been goal hungry, and they've only conceded 2.25. You look at Kilkenny, they've scored 6.72 versus conceding 4.32. So it'll be interesting to see defensively how Kilkenny go about their business at the weekend. Looking at that and looking at the form, you'd have to go to Galway because they just seem to be a goal machine at the moment. However, seeing the likes of Henley being brought off the field at the weekend, you know, I think she brings something really different to Galway, and not just from her place balls, but that sideline or freeze. I think she offers them a little bit more in attack, especially with her strength. So I think that's probably just a question mark. I think they had a few niggles from the weekend as well, Shane. So be interesting to see how they go about their business. But at the end of the day, I think, look, either Galway or Kilkenny, I don't think they'd be too disappointed looking at a quarter final, get another competitive match in, and being able to go into, if you win that, going into the semi final, with having that extra competitive game, in particularly a competitive knockout game. So, you know, I think either way they'll be happy as long as there's good performances there. But it should be a cracker.
Yeah, absolutely. That one down in Galway. So I suppose they're nearly straight shootouts as well, because third place Limerick are on the road to face fourth place Antrim. Limerick on 6 points, Antrim on 4 points. So again, so much on the line for this one.
Yeah, and that should be a really interesting game because, you know, when you look back to the first two games, Antrim, I think, were like second or third. I can't remember now, Shane, but they were pretty close to the top of the table and competing really well. And then you had Limerick kind of got off to a bit of a slower start. So if you start to look at that, you wonder, are Limerick coming in maybe hitting form at the right time? But it's certainly a straight shootout, 6 points versus four. To me, it's a real hard one to call. If you're Antrim, I suppose your main thing if you're Antrim there is you mark Costello and you try and cut off that threat as much as possible, and then you'll have a chance in the game.
Absolutely. Well, it will be interesting to see. And the final fixture in that is, of course, Down versus Offaly, to see who will avoid bottom place in Group 2. Aoife Murray, so much on the line this weekend, and I cannot wait to review it all with you next weekend. Thank you so much, as always, for taking the call. But we are going to move straight on to tennis in the company of Stephen Higgins from Cross Court View. And Stephen, you are over in Wimbledon. I'm always very jealous, be it chatting to Greg, who's down enjoying himself at Mount Juliet, or yourself, who's over at Wimbledon as well. I do want to ask you about Serena Williams and that absolute epic encounter, but just wrapping up today, Raducanu dumped out of Wimbledon by Caroline Garcia, and that was a match that you were at. So she was defeated in straight sets, 6-3, 6-3.
Yeah, I kind of feel sorry for Emma Pelton. I think there's a young distraught fan near me, actually, if you hear wails and cries in the background. Poor Emma, yeah. More sponsorships than injuries and coaches than wins, unfortunately, over the last 6 months since the US Open title. Yeah, I watched the match. Caroline Garcia is a very streaky player. Remember, this is a player who, when she was 17, and she had a breakout at Roland Garros, Andy Murray tweeted that he thought she'd be world number one. Now, she did make world number one in doubles, but she's been a top 10 player in singles. And I think the moment of the Raducanu came in with injury problems, wasn't sure if she was going to play or not, got through the first round. But she looked quite uncertain of herself and struggled, particularly when Caroline Garcia rushed her, came into the net, made Raducanu come up a shot, and she just didn't really have the confidence or form. And centre court can feel quite oppressive when you have 10,000 fans with the old, come on, Emma.
Very much so. Well, might the home crowd be in for a bit more disappointment, because Isner is currently leading Andy Murray by 1-0. He took the first set 6-4 and was possibly nearly broke, actually, Andy Murray's serve there as well. So how do you see that one panning out?
Yeah, that could be a long battle. Murray, obviously, over the years has proven he's one of the greatest returners in history. He's had great bouts with the likes of Ivo Karlovic, John Isner, Sam Querrey, where he's good enough that he can just pick off his returns and take advantage in the rallies when he gets the opportunity. The only thing is, obviously, we're a few years on now from his prime. He's probably still not sure, like the rest of, how good he can still compete at this level. John Isner is a veteran. A serve is still 140 miles an hour. He'll probably be 140 miles an hour when he's 50 years old. And the question is just, can Murray find those special moments just when he gets the opportunities on, say, second thirds or he gets into rallies, but I wouldn't be surprised if that went five.
Okay, we'll be interested to see how that goes. Novak Djokovic had a fairly handy and comprehensive victory as well earlier today. World number one, Iga Swiatek, who we've chatted about plenty, Stephen. She's into the record books in style as she won her 36th match in a row with victory over Jana Fett on centre court. But, Stephen, I want to chat Serena Williams and, of course, her hopes of a victorious return to Wimbledon after a year out ended with a loss to Harmony Tan, the great American who's 40 years of age now, returned to the same centre court where she limped out injured last year with a passionate display. However, it wasn't good enough. Was this the greatest first round match at Wimbledon ever, or are we all just bigging it up a bit too much?
I think there's a kind of a sadly tragic quality to it, because if you took out the emotion and obviously the completely understandable respect and adulation for someone of her stature, just like Roger, just like Rafa, just like Novak, if you told Serena Williams 5 or 10 years ago that she would lose to Harmony Tan in the first round of Wimbledon, her being the greatest basketball player of her generation, 7 titles, I think she wouldn't believe you, probably. And we didn't really know what she'd be like coming in. She announced only just before Easter and the run-up to Wimbledon that she's going to play. You know, many of us thought probably that she was basically retired without saying so. She turned up, so she had no form to go on. But it's just at 40 years of age, with all the players so good now, able to last in the rallies with her, her serve, while the greatest we've seen in the women's game, isn't quite at the level it used to be in her absolute prime. She was winning majors left and right. And so now, of course, we wonder, where does it go from here? She's still chasing the 24 grand slams of marble court. You wonder, is there a point in her life, though, where that would be unreachable and maybe she'll want to focus on her things? She has, obviously, a number of business interests and incredible appeal globally in all different spheres. Whether it's the best first-round match of all time, I'm not sure. Maybe there's recency bias there.
Okay, well, good stuff. Listen, Stephen, time is against us. So, in a word, in one single word, will we see Serena back at Wimbledon again, yes or no?
Yes.
Yes, okay, there you've had it there. World exclusive from Stephen Higgins from Cross Court View. Time is against us, but do stay tuned to 2FM because Tara Kumar is up next with all of the latest Irish hits. I'll be back tomorrow from 6 o'clock. So from all of the Game On team, it's bye for now.
RTE 2FM.
Game On
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.